Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
It's been about 5 years since we last spoke with the makers of Carlsberg, a Denmark-based brewing company. When we first did it, it was about how they were making beer production more sustainable. Today, we're joined by Simon Hofmeyer-Boas of Carlsberg to talk about a new recyclable beer bottle they've been developing. He joins us now, all the way from Denmark, to tell us about the world's first. Simon, welcome to Green Sense.
Thanks a lot.
Well, this is pretty remarkable. The world's first paper beer bottle made from recyclable wood fibers. This has been in development for 4 years. What took so long, and what are the specific challenges that you were facing that took so long in the development?
Yeah, so, you know, basically in 2015, we decided to tell the world that we were actually working on creating a beer bottle made from recyclable fibers, sustainably harvested fibers. And we actually did that at the World Economic Forum in Davos, where our chairman of the board and the majority owner of Carlsberg, the chairman of the foundation, Flemming Besenbacher, took up a prototype shell of a fiber-based bottle and said to the world, we want to do this. We don't know exactly how we will do it, and that's why I'm standing here today. I want to call upon partners, innovators, anyone who can help us make a bottle from fibers with the right coatings, with the right barriers that will enable us to sell beer in it, because we believe it is a great offering to our consumers. We believe that we will be able to sell beer in a different way to perhaps different consumers if we make this bottle reality. So that was the whole basis for why we did it. And I think, you know, the testament that last Friday we were standing on a stage together with a brand new company, Pavoco, the paper bottle company, who has now been established based on the vision we had in 15, and that we now also have amazing global brands on board, L'Oreal, The Absolut Company, and Coca-Cola, who has now joined us on this mission. It's just a testament to the fact that the strategy was the right one.
Well, that sounds fantastic, but 4 years is a long time. What took so long? What was the biggest challenge?
So I can say that, first of all, the first challenge is to actually use this 3D molded fiber technology to in fact be able to create a shape that lives up to all the quality and consumer standards. And secondly, the other challenge was to find a barrier that would in fact enable us to let the bottle contain beer and again living up to the quality standards. I think it's pretty clear that if you had a bottle that was not keeping the liquid inside and the beer inside, it wouldn't be a very big success.
No, I don't think so. So what are the advantages over a beer can or a glass bottle that are both can be recyclable?
Yeah, so I think it's important to remember that this project is not only a sustainability project. It is also an innovation project. And basically what we want to do is to offer the consumers something new, a new drinking experience. And we're trying to find out where they would like a fiber bottle, so in which occasion, in which drinking occasion they would prefer it. Secondly, the project is, of course, a sustainability project. And what we mean with that is that basically we want to create a bottle that has the same low carbon footprint as our best performing packaging today, which is a refillable glass bottle, which in Denmark can be refilled you know, all the way up to 30 to 50 times. So with this fiber-based bottle, we want to create one that has the same strong environmental credentials as the refillable glass bottle, while being totally new, different, engaging to our consumers at the same time.
Do you see a spin-off business where you'll go in the bottle business and sell this to other companies?
So as I said, actually, you know, we're a brewer, and we're not actually that interested in vertically integrating companies into our value chain. So we will stay a brewer, and that also means that what we do is we create partnerships to develop fantastic new innovations. Another example is the Snap Pack that we also launched in September last year, where we are gluing cans together rather than wrapping them in shrink wrapping or holding them together with plastic rings. So that's another example of a partnership where we worked with a supplier on developing this from the bottom. And we are first with launching it as a company, but then actually we want to share it with the world. And that's also what you see with the green fiber bottle that, you know, of course, because of all this time we have spent on developing this together with our amazing partners, we want to be first in the market, but then anyone can have access to it. So the very, very short answer is we're not looking to buy up companies or start making packaging, but we do want to add our very specific knowledge about the consumers, about beer, and about sustainability to help small companies with great ideas to achieve scale and to unleash the potential of the technologies in all the other industries that are out there that they can serve and make more sustainable.
Well, reducing your carbon footprint is fantastic, and having a sustainable company is what many people aspire to. But when you produce beer, it comes down to one thing, that's taste. And to some, beer in a bottle tastes better. With a fiber bottle, will that impact the taste of your great beer?
Absolutely no. And you know what? We have quality standards. And as with anything, quality comes first. We will not even consider launching a sustainability project if it doesn't live up to our quality standards. So no, the taste won't be different. We would simply not allow it. But what is great about beer is that a lot of people have opinions about it. It makes people feel something. It is not an elitist product. It's a product for everyone. And that's also why it's great when we launch an aspiration like the Green Fiber Bottle Project. We have reactions spanning from, you know, don't touch my glass bottle, or I prefer cans, or why don't you just do draft because that's the most sustainable alternative. You know, and this kind of feedback, it's just great for us because we like being able to sell a product that people care about, that people have an opinion about, rather than the opposite. So to the people who say, you know, I'm not interested in a green fiber bottle because I want to stay with my glass bottle, I will say, you know, that's exactly why we have variety. That's why we have different packaging types. It is to cater for everyone. And that's what we're trying to do here, except that we want to cater for something that people don't know that they would like. Perhaps there is a consumer type out there that has previously not been that interested in beer. But just imagine if we can make them interested in beer because we make a new type of packaging. See, now that's my dream and that's my vision. You know, being able to offer more sustainable experiences to the consumers and perhaps even getting new consumers on board. That's kind of nirvana for me.
Well, that's why we love our job, because we get to meet passionate people like you that are making a difference. When will we start seeing these beer bottles in stores?
So basically what we're doing is we're testing the prototypes we've developed in the next couple of years. So we're going to festivals, we're going to specific restaurants, we're going to the pubs, we're going to the cafes. So we're going to be testing this bottle in all of these different occasions to find out what consumers feel about it, what they like, what they don't like, what we can optimize, which price they're willing to pay, what they're excited about, and so on. And then after that, we will start a bigger scale introduction into the market. But that also very much depends on the ability of the paper bottle company, Paboco, and how many bottles they are able to produce, at which speed and where and so on. But the testing is now going to continue for the next couple of years.
When I think of a bottle, I think of something made out of glass. Are you going to change the name of this or still call it a paper bottle?
So, the working title is the paper bottle or even the green fiber bottle. And so far, that's what we're sticking to. But, you know, we're open for any great suggestions you might have on that account.
Well, we'll be interested to see that in the store. Do you expect the paper bottles to attract more sales?
So, as I said My hope is that we'll be able to attract perhaps new consumers to our great products, to beer, with this bottle. And yes, I'm of course expecting that this will be torn down the shelves as soon as it gets on there. And I'm hoping that the consumers will love it as much as I do. So yeah, I definitely hope that it'll attract more sales.
We first interviewed you in 2014 to talk about the sustainable innovations at Carlsberg. And, you know, Carlsberg's a very interesting company, the way it's corporately structured. And you really do have a vision and a mission on sustainability. Beside the new beer bottles, what else has Carlsberg introduced in sustainability since we last spoke?
Oh, so how long do you have, Robert?
No, about
but,
a minute.
If I'm just if I'm going to just summarize in a minute what we've done, well, we've launched our first carbon neutral brewery in Sweden, so running only on green electricity and biogas, part of which we produce ourselves. We have launched the investment in a state of the art wastewater treatment plant that will bring us down from 2.9 hectoliters of water per hectoliter of beer to 1.4 once it's introduced. That will be absolute world class. That's done through a public-private partnership in Denmark. We have launched a Cradle to Cradle certified silver green color that improves the recyclability of the paper and cardboard upon it, upon which it's applied. We have introduced recycled material in our shrink wrap where we still need to use the shrink wrap. We introduced the snap pack that I told you about. We have introduced a coating on our refillable glass bottle in order to make them last longer and be more circular. You know, really a lot of stuff going on at Carlsberg. And, you know, I'll welcome any of the listeners to go into carlsberggroup.com/sustainability and just, you know, follow what we're doing because we've got so many more things coming in the coming months and years.
Well, Simon, thank you for joining us on Green Sense and congratulations on all your success and really being a model and a leader in the field of sustainability and brewing.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
That's Simon Hofmeyer Boas of Carlsberg joining us from Denmark to talk about the newly unveiled paper beer bottles. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. Virginia, a state with a long history of coal mining, recently made a commitment to meet all of its electricity needs with renewable energy by the year 2050. With a look at how the state might get there and how other states could follow suit, we're joined by Rob Sargent of Environment America. Rob, welcome to Green Sense.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
This goal of meeting 100% renewables for electricity in Virginia was by executive order of Governor Ralph Northam, a Democrat. This would be blasphemy in any other time with a state in somewhat opposition to one of the state's largest employers, the coal industry. Why now?
I think the why now, I think, is several factors. One is because we must, and I think there's an increasing realization that we've got to transition as quickly as possible to clean sources of energy to address the environmental consequences of our current energy use, everything from air pollution to water pollution to, needless to say, last but not least, warming of the atmosphere that's wreaking havoc on our climate from burning fossil fuels. So that's the one reason. The other reason is because we can. And there's an increasing, I think, realization that aiming high and transitioning to wind, solar, energy storage with an assist from energy efficiency can get us all or most of the way to where we need to be.
Was there much pushback from the Virginia coal industry?
I'm sure there was some pushback, I'm sure that, you know, at this point, I think what the fossil fuel industry is doing everywhere is slow walking. I think they've gone from, you know, it's what's that saying, you know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And I think, you know, we're in the sort of, they're acknowledging that clean energy is an unstoppable force, and people are realizing the downsides of our fossil fuel use, and so they're slow walking everything, sort of trying to embrace the idea that we're shifting to clean energy, but to control, to slow the growth of it. So I think that's what you're seeing in Virginia and everywhere else. I would reject the first thing you said, though, is that the coal industry is, I don't think, one of, by even close to Virginia's largest employers. I think it's more of a sort of iconic. I mean, there's certainly there are a set of people that are employed in the coal industry, and we need to be sensitive to that. But when I say that, I mean acknowledge some disruption in a transition. But I don't think that the Virginia economy is very reliant on coal.
One compromiser or obvious solution is, why doesn't the coal industry invest in renewables?
Well, because they have a lot of coal that they in the ground that they want to. That's their stock and trade. And I think, you know, the sad reality, or the reality, is that there is no future for that. So I'm sure some of the people. I think you're certainly seeing investors transition from away from coal into to renewables. But if you've got a lot of coal, you know, if you got a lot of shoes, you're not going to, you know, want to start selling something else. You're going to get rid of your shoe inventory. So I think that's the situation we're faced with. They're faced with.
What sources of renewable energy will Virginia be relying on?
Well, this, you know, every state, I think, has unique attributes and different strengths in terms of what their potential is. But, but primarily it'll be wind and solar with an assist from energy storage, and fundamental to any significant and meaningful energy transition is a recognition that one of our problems is that we just simply use too much energy to begin with. So conservation and efficiency have to be part of any overarching plan. You know, the sun is an abundant resource, and, you know, Virginia has plenty of that. And then the other, I think, big untapped resource in Virginia, which is beginning to emerge along the Atlantic coast, other Atlantic coast states, is offshore wind. And there's more than enough wind energy off the Virginia coast to meet, you know, all of Virginia's energy needs. We're not necessarily proposing that's what you would do, but certainly so far Virginia's tapped zero of that. So there's a lot there, you know, that's a huge untapped resource that I think you'll in the end see Virginia go big on.
How does Virginia's goal to be 100% renewables in a 30-year timeline compare with other states? Are they ahead of the curve, behind the curve?
Well, I would say in terms of the goal, there's only maybe 10 or 12 states that have even put that out as a goal. There are now 6 states that actually have codified passed laws, in other words, to move to 100% clean or renewable or carbon-free electricity. And so Virginia has not yet done that, but it's very encouraging to see this transition. When we first started sort of aiming for 100%, you know, 5 or 7 years ago, people would have, you know, sort of, patronizingly patted us on the head for, you know, having sort of a laudable but unachievable goal. And I think what we're seeing now is just huge momentum. You know, 6 states have adopted it. There's a number now of governors, Wisconsin, Minnesota, a handful of other states that have announced goals, and through executive orders or otherwise, which is, you know, the first step to set the goals. And then you've got to make sure that you put the building blocks in place to begin to move towards that. So, you know, so it's significant, but now the, you know, other state leaders and stakeholders in Virginia need to start working together, rowing in the same direction. And then once that starts happening, I think you'll just see, you'll see a lot more progress.
Environment America has put out a new study showing the U.S. has increased solar power generation by 40-fold in the last 10 years, and wind power is up by more than 270%. Why aren't we hearing more about this in the mainstream media? These are great numbers.
They are great numbers, and you know, it's one of the things that I, you know, I don't know why we're not hearing more about it. Yeah, I don't know. It feels like we don't hear about much except for kind of crazy things happening in Washington these days. But, you know, I do think that people, you know, that's one of the goals of the report that we did, was to show people that the progress, that there's much, you know, to try to get people over the hump of thinking that there's no hope. People that are concerned about, you know, the looming, it's not even looming, we're entering a climate crisis. And so the idea that renewables are growing much faster than most people realize, we hope will give people the confidence that we can take it to the next level, aim high and take it to the next level. So I think civil society is realizing it. Corporate America, if you don't count even the fossil fuel industry understands it. They're just trying to, as I said, slow walk it. But, you know, there's 150 major corporations in the U.S. ranging from Walmart to GM to Google to, you know, that have, or they're orienting their business plan around the idea of meeting, you know, around a goal of meeting all of their energy needs with renewables. So they're doing it, you know, maybe in part because they care about the future of the planet, that but mostly it's because it just simply makes sense to tap, you know, the sun is by far the biggest resource we have, energy resource we have. And it's, you know, we could power the entire nation with it in terms of the amount of energy there. And we have the ingenuity to figure out how to save that energy for later, you know, when the sun's not shining. Same with the wind. So we're starting to see a lot of momentum. Cities and towns are and counties are making commitments, states are making commitments, and I think the snowball is starting to roll down the hill. We certainly have forces in Washington that aligned with the fossil fuel industry that are trying to melt that snowball.
let's talk about that for a second. With our current presidential administration expressing doubts about the existence of climate change and casting aspersions on wind energy, do you think that the industry has enough momentum to keep moving forward independent of these policy positions for the current administration? Or do you think it's going to slow growth of renewables?
It will not stop renewables. It certainly, I think, has contributed to slowing the growth, the you know, almost exponential growth trajectory. But it's still growing incredibly fast. I think it's unstoppable, but it's on us, you know, and it's unfortunate, right? You know, I would liken it to, you know, you know, having one foot on the accelerator, you know, with the growth of renewables, and one foot on the brake, and that's,
I like that analogy, right?
And you know, that's not a very smart way to move forward. That's what we're doing right now. So, as soon as Washington takes its foot off the brake, you know, the sky's the limit. But the good news is that we, despite, you know, repeated attempts, I mean, Rick Perry just announced he's, you know, leaving at the end of the year. And thankfully, he was a completely incompetent Secretary of Energy in the sense that his agenda was to bring back coal, subsidize outdated and uneconomic nuclear plants, and you know, repeated attempts to propose to do that have failed, partly because they were ineffective in the policy proposals they did, but mostly because it just makes zero sense, and nobody agrees with doing that, except for a very narrow set of people in an echo chamber that still think that we should, be using mid-20th century energy technologies, or even 19th century energy technologies in some cases. So,
So most of us who aren't in D.C. And very few of us can change things in D.C. So what can the average citizen do to make sure that this growth in renewable energy continues?
I think several things. I mean, one is obviously, take stock of what role you're playing, and if look at the opportunities to, save energy in your home, drive a little less, look at ways to, if you could put solar on your home, think about opportunities to do that. Think about opportunities to get your place of worship or your school or your city hall or your community to do more renewables. And certainly, without question, demand that your local, state, and federal people understand how important you think that the clean energy transition is, and make those voices heard in the decision making arena.
That's Rob Sargent of Environment America sharing some good news about renewable energy in the U.S. Thanks for joining us on GreenSense. We know you have lots of choices out there, and we appreciate you putting your time into learning more about how you can make the world more sustainable. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Thanks for listening to GreenSense. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.